in our last interview, you were talking about taking a couple of years sabbatical and going off to Cranbrook Corp to get your MFA. But something's come up in the meantime. A little bit earlier, you had been involved in a television show in 57, which was about feminine, what they call feminine stylists in those days. This must have been a first for television.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about
that?
No,
I think it was. Well, we had an interview, and I can't remember the name of the woman now, but if it doesn't say there. Anyway.
Lee Murray.
Okay, Lee Murray.
She went on to become fairly well known.
Yes, she did, and really enjoyed it, and it was fun. We, Harold Jackson and I drove up to the studio in a Cadillac convertible.
Now, who was Harold Jackson?
He was the PR executive at the time, I believe.
The design,
is his name?
The design section.
Yeah, I think he was. And so that was exciting. I'd never been inside of a Cadillac. And with a top down and wonderful day and promises of, you know, this is really going to be exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And when we arrived, nothing was ready, you know, as usual, hurry up and wait. And
HEM TV, Bay City?
That was in Bay City, so
yeah.
We did have quite a nice drive.
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous sunny day, and as all things go, you have to try it three times before you get it right. And they decided it would be great if they had their opening shot of the arrival. Our arrival in the Cadillac, so that got some PR for Cadillac,
sure.
And then into the studio, but things were delayed terribly, and being a bit nervous about this whole scene, I had not eaten much, and they kept promising that we would eat first, and maybe afterwards, and like all productions go, none of those things happen. And again, these are just side observations, but it was not very well organized. But when we finally got on the air, I really forgot about being very nervous, and really all I had to do was talk about what I was doing in the field at the time, and showed some of my sketches and ideas, and Lee Murray would ask questions and really just say, well, what would you tell someone else that would be interested in this? And I made a terrible scene. I said, work hard and go to a good school. And I just got so hysterical they probably had to turn the thing off at that point. It wasn't very long.
Hysterical in what sense?
Laughing.
I
thought this whole thing was very serious at first, and then the usual questions came. And she tried to give me an indication ahead of time of what we were going to talk about. All that was fine until she hit me at the end with this question that we hadn't prepared for. And of course everybody was scurrying around with their machines, you know, and lights blinking on and off.
Very distracting.
Well, it was, but it was my introduction, I think, to the media, so to say.
But you got a good recommend from Mr. Jackson to Mr. Christensen.
Well, all those things helped.
And he said you should share this with Mr. Earl.
That's right. Yeah. But I never saw any more money in my pocket.
Mr. Earl must have been very close to the end of his career at that time.
Mid-57. Yeah, I don't really recall, but I had a great deal of respect for him, and naturally he is the man who was instrumental in getting women into design, and I think he really thought of it in terms of doing something, not just sitting at a desk and having your picture taken.
This might be a good time to delve into that somewhat in detail. Obviously, when you got there, Mr. Earl was still very much involved. I see you got there in
55.
He was 3 years away from retirement, but still very much in control. And can you tell us a little bit about, expand on that point you made a moment ago, about how he must have been a pioneer in having female designers, because he had so many.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Can you tell have you ever reflected on how this came about, why he felt that way?
No, I really don't know. It's possible, since he had such tremendous vision into what was happening in the world and the future of it, that perhaps he just felt that the women's aspect was not only important, but... And I had to continue to tell myself that.
Right.
And but also, maybe he thought it would be good PR, too.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And I'm sure none of that hurt.
Right.
And then, of course, being the first, as far as we were concerned.
Mm-hmm.
That made him, I think, look good from every corner, mm-hmm. because it worked out as well as it did. You're always going to have people who become dissatisfied. You will always have people who don't work out, but that was part of the agreement. You work for us 6 months, and then we decide, and you decide whether or not you want to continue. So I felt under the direction of Harley Earl that he was a gentleman, in spite of the stories that you hear. He was always a gentleman,
mm-hmm.
with those of us. And more father figure, maybe,
mm-hmm.
Than boss.
Mm-hmm.
And commanded, as I said before, a great deal of respect, and whatever he said, we did. Now, today, you would fight that. Women would fight that, maybe, because if you don't want to do that, then there are other roads to take. But he seemed to generally enjoy himself,
mm-hmm.
as well, and he loved having all the girls around and having,
yes.
his picture taken with him, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And aside from that, I think we did some good things. But what we disliked, and I personally did, is designing these, what they call femme cars. And
yes.
they were on exhibit. And we had times when we had to do 2, 3, and 4 different cars and have them on display. And
mm-hmm.
again, lots of press. But when you think about it, it was for our own good, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what goes on.
You've alluded to the femme or feminine cars syndrome that you got caught up in certain publicity programs for Chevrolet. Can you expand on that and tell us how that came about and why?
Well, I just think it was, for a while they had to advertise that they had women in design, and then they had to say what we did. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure anyone believed that we could put things together and have something three-dimensional to look at.
Yeah.
Whereas with the men, you could just say, well, he's a car designer, and that was the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a feeling that it was for our benefit, too.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted
yeah.
the press on it.
Yeah.
It
wasn't purely exploited. It was,
I don't think so. We felt it was, because mm-hmm. we wanted to do more than just decorate. But I think in order to again, maintain the respect for the company, and we were young, and that was the way things were done, we didn't fight it. We did internally, but
mm-hmm.
we could not discuss that. We just went ahead and did it. And it was also a very good experience, because we had to not only do that work and prepare for it and talk to vendors about certain materials, but making the presentation, none of us have really had that kind of, at least I didn't have that kind of experience,
mm-hmm.
to talk to general managers, talk to the press.
Right.
Suddenly, you know, 100 people are in the auditorium, and you have to tell people how and what and why, just as we're doing now. And that was not always very easy.
So by today's standards, the lead on the release from the Chevrolet division is a bit chauvinistic when it talks about looking into the picture windows of her modern automobile, a woman may see her second living room, an answer to an interior decorating challenge greater than that presented in the smartest contemporary.
Oh, well, of course, we disliked that tremendously.
Well, you must
but
have
we
been.
Couldn't tell them what to write,
right.
and they would not give us
a chance to do that.
Great. Whatever they would, if we had a chance, we would often eliminate half of their story because it wasn't exactly the way we felt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think bedroom on wheels or living room on wheels or whatever was the farthest from our mind.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly good design should be for men and women. And I think they tried to separate it too much to even get into the point of designing a car for a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Women and men have similar situations, and except for the fact that we might more often drive children. If you're married and have 3 or 4 children, you drive them to all their activities during the day. That might be different than what the male role would be. But
yeah.
today, the men could be doing that too.
Sure.
So essentially, I think we did see that there wasn't a real need for a car specifically for a woman. And to say that women choose the car by color and material and forget about the engine, in some cases that may be true. So that's probably why they emphasize color and trim,
mm-hmm.
so that women could feel more a part of the buying
right.
Situation. Men might maybe still choose the horsepower or cylinders or body styles, and women have their choice of color. But I didn't feel that was a true designer's test. That's
mm-hmm.
something that you just do automatically.
But in spite of the archaic sounding language, it was realistically, it was a chance for women to be part of the selection process in the, along with their husbands, for the kind of car she would feel most comfortable in.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I think maybe we gave women the opportunity
right.
to make a statement.
Exactly.
And in those days, we had one car, and we predicted two and three cars to a lot of the press, and they wouldn't believe it. Now look at what's happening.
Yeah.
And many women do have their own cars.
Right.
Maybe we're just a little ahead of our time, or Harley Earl was ahead of his time.
I'm fascinated by the fact that Earl, who came up from a strictly, probably a strict chauvinist background, however, his experience perhaps in Hollywood, in which he was when he was making custom cars for the fact that there are many single and very wealthy female movie stars who made their own choices. Not in terms of fabrics and color, but exterior design as well. It's very possible that he had felt from the beginning that the woman's voice was very strong in the selection.
Process. He continued that when he was with styling, as they called it then, because I designed a car, and it was a station wagon for Dinah Shore. It's one of my first assignments with
really?
Henry Love.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I know, I never knew her reaction to it. As far as I know, it was A-okay, but there was a lot of that,
yeah.
A lot of that, and I think it was excellent PR. She didn't know that I did it, but I knew I did, and
yes.
I thought that was wonderful. That Dinah Shore, who was the Chevrolet...
the reigning queen of Chevrolet
yes.
of those days.
Yeah.
Yes, right.
Uh-huh. So I have some color and trim and photographs of that you can see.
I notice here that one factor talks about, it's quite. It seems quaint today, but it's still a problem, the factor of slidability.
Mm-hmm.
Upholstery fabrics that you've got to get across those cushions to get out the door
mm-hmm.
or to get in.
And I have a velour interior and I can't move to my car anyway. And I think it's just a matter of time when you run out of this slidability is, the slidability is fine, but if you've ever been on a leather seat that has no contour, and you stop short or you turn fast, you're moving around in that car, even with a lap belt and a shoulder harness.
Sure.
And I'm not sure the validity of all of those things
mm-hmm.
now when it's possible to take the seat and turn it if you had to. I mean, there were times when we proposed seats to actually turn to a point where you just stand on the side of the road and sit down and then and slide back in again with
mm-hmm.
the seat doing the work for you. Therefore, you didn't need anything that was slidable.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I think sliding in and out is certainly, there is an advantage to that.
Yeah.
And we try to develop fabrics that would accommodate, but you get to a point where velour is popular in homes, you
yeah.
use it in cars, and vice versa.
Yeah.
We use the fashion industry a lot for trends in color and fabrics. Not design, but generally, they had a handle on it sooner than we did, meaning Paris shows and any of the fashion industry shows we tried to attend.
Well, obviously, though, it pained you. You were obviously initially very helpful to the design process by having a sensitivity to color and to fabric that perhaps a male would not.
They would certainly refute that.
Would they? Good.
Oh, yes.
Well, please do. Yeah,
I think they would feel that if you're a trained designer, that the only area that I think maybe we had a slight edge was intuition.
Okay.
And you could apply that to any area that you might like to. Many of the men had as good a color, I hate to use the word color sense, but that's the way it is.
Yeah.
And trained, and we have subsequently learned that there are certain colors that people look better wearing, but you have to, or living with, than
mm-hmm.
others.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to realize how many other people there are out there who may like black instead of green, and we get numbers on that, and certainly all the information is there that we want to for research. To see which color might be the best for whatever car line or whatever. But we have to remember that every time I would look at, let's say, a red, I would prefer something that had a drop of orange in it, or yellow, or red-orange, because I like the appearance of that better than what we used to call lipstick red or a magenta.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have since learned that those are not the colors that I particularly liked.
Mm-hmm.
So you see...
You're talking about exterior or interior?
Exterior now, yeah, particularly. Okay. We had a Corvette lineup, and I had 10 cars painted in what I felt were perfect Corvette colors, trying very hard to realize the buyer.
Yes.
And what was our market and all of that.
And
Charlie Jordan would just absolutely disagree totally with some of the colors, and I couldn't understand it. But I'm beginning to think that maybe it's because he saw red as a Ferrari red.
So he still sees,
and he
Ferrari
still
red.
Sees it that
just,
way.
He's got a new one.
So you know what I'm saying. It's,
yeah.
It's whatever somebody feels comfortable with. And if he's the boss, my red-orange went out. And we would have to do certain things. And it was all right, it's just that how many people are what I call winter types, and how many people are summer types, and where are you selling the most of these? Demographics to me was very, very important.
Mm-hmm. Did you do some, you obviously did some research on on exterior and interior colors and fabrics?
We did a lot, I did a lot of that, and, also demographics in terms of where people were living, where were they, where most young people were at the time. I felt that was important. We did not have a service for that. We had to do it ourselves. Today, you could probably pull it off a computer. In fact, we did ask, goodness, probably when I was in Chevrolet, I called upon our consultant psychologist, and I said, you know, part of our problem here is paperwork. We don't do, as a manager, you don't do the design anymore. It's all personnel work or paperwork or setting up meetings, going to meetings, and the design end of it is about less than one third.
Yes, right.
So how can we get recall quickly? And I said, I'd like a computer here to reach for 3 years ago and the present and 3 years hence of all of our coloring and our striping, tops, and whatever it is we were dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it wasn't available. You had to buy a room full of equipment. Now you know what
desktop,
we have.
Yeah, everyone has one.
And so again, we were burdened, burdened, burdened. I think it would be maybe a little bit easier now.
Mm-hmm. Did probably this is premature, but did you get caught up in that in the Naugahyde vinyl revolution of the late 60s and early 70s?
Oh yes, it was very hot.
Yes, I had one.
And very sticky.
Yes.
And even the instrument panel would, you know, emit some kind of a vapor onto the onto the windshield, and you couldn't see out. Yes.
Right.
But that was not that was an engineering problem. I can't. We did not design the vinyl. We just recognized there was a problem with it.
Yeah.
And even today, some people don't like sitting on leather. They still feel it's hot. But I think it looks terrific.
Oh, gosh. Well, we left you. After a interesting interlude, deciding to go back to school for your MFA, and what sort of reaction did you get to this when you requested it?
Well, unfortunately, I'm certainly not telling tales, I'm sure, because it was a very difficult thing to get, permission.
Yes.
And I think someone else had gotten time off like this and then left the company, and they didn't like that.
Oh, really? If they felt that you were broadening your horizons, you might outgrow
might
them.
Be. And because, you know, they'd put a lot of time and money and effort into this.
Mm-hmm.
So, they had to make sure that I would be returning, and I assured them I would be. I had no thought of leaving.
Did
I just wanted a break.
Something?
No, not really. No, not really. They just wanted to be sure that I wasn't going to leave them.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, I felt that in any job, people needed a change or
a
vacation. Yeah, and I had also thought in the back of my mind that maybe someday that I would want to teach, which I knew I didn't, but you never knew. And in that case, I would need a Master of Fine Arts. So yes, it was a struggle, but as you see, they gave me a full tuition scholarship, and I had no problems once we...
Tell us about your sojourn at Cranbrook. How was it? What was that?
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I put my Corvette up on blocks and bought a Volkswagen because of having to lug a lot of junk around. I didn't want to do that with a Corvette.
Mm-hmm.
And I found just meeting a different, well, it was a completely different atmosphere. You worked on your own, really mostly on your own in the master's area.
Mm-hmm.
And you were given assignments and that was it. You had to complete them yourself. But I switched from the design department to the metalsmithing department. But the only way that I could get there was to say I was going to take design, further my design education.
How did that happen? Was it something that you
I didn't feel I was learning enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I switched from design to metalsmithing, which was a direct correlation to what I was working with. Mm-hmm. You know, you learn to cast, you learn to forge, you learn to how sheet metal would bend and move, and that's what I was doing. And of course, in the back of my mind, I had thoughts of maybe doing some exterior work. We didn't get to that. So I convinced them that this would be a very strong learning process to know more about metals, not just silver and gold, but mm-hmm. copper and aluminum and steel. We worked in all of those mm-hmm. medias. And Mr. Thomas, who has since retired as head of the metal department, was very instrumental in encouraging me to do this. So I finished in a year and a half. I took a half a year in design and the other half totally in metalsmithing, and wrote my paper during the summer. I convinced General Motors that I needed the time to do my research, and so I was able to do that at home.
What was the topic?
Symbolism, liturgical symbolism.
In?
Metal.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And,
by liturgical, you mean religious?
Religious symbolism, and that meant that I had to actually make all of the pieces. And one of those, a chalice, is now at the Cranbrook Museum Permanent Collection, which I'm really happy to have donated. And they asked me for some work, which made it even better.
Great.
So maybe after all those years, they're beginning to appreciate what some of the old timers did.
Can you give us the full name of Cranbrook?
Cranbrook Academy of Art.
In?
Bloomfield Hills. It's on Lone Pine Road, 500 Lone Pine Road. But I find that learning from the students too, because they were from so many different schools, and some were very old people and some were very young at the time.
Some of them had metallurgical backgrounds too.
Yes, oh yes. Learned a great deal, and now as a result of that I'm able to continue doing some of that work for myself.
Are you?
Yes. I'm in the process of rebuilding the shop. So it's easier for me to work down there.
Good.
And also I borrowed photographic equipment to photograph all of the work, so I have a complete file on everything that I've done.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I still felt that when I went back to work for General Motors, they said, well, did you have a good time? And I said, no, I worked harder there than I did here. And I really did. It was a grind.
In the back of your mind, you mentioned a moment ago that you were working with metals might give you a leg up to the exterior department.
It didn't.
Did you, when you went back to work to General Motors in
65, mm-hmm.
did you give them a full rundown of what you'd been doing?
Well, I sent Phil Mitchell that time.
Who had, of course, about nine years before, mm-hmm. had succeeded
Harley Earl,
Harley Earl mm-hmm. as chief of vice president of design.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And he looked at the portfolio of work and felt that it was a good job and a job well done, but I don't know that he could see the correlation.
I wonder why. It seems fairly easy to do so today. Perhaps it was the era. Or perhaps it was his background.
I think maybe that might have been more like it.
Mr. Mitchell has been described as not the most forward-looking person in terms of human relationships.
No, I think he wanted to say things to us, but maybe didn't know how. For example, today you are more apt to be told that you're doing a good job, we appreciate what you're doing. And in those days, it sounds like it's 100 years ago, but it really wasn't that long ago. They just assumed that was your job.
Yeah.
And, you know, why do you have to be, you know, congratulated?
Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he felt that that was just a little vacation, that it wasn't anything to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Since that time, and since he has retired, and I have retired, I think he feels now that there was room for me to move if I had wanted to, and he thought very highly of me, which I'm very happy about, because he never told me that.
Mm.
And I'm sad to this day that we have never had a conversation as you and I are having right now on a more casual basis, because there was no competition there.
Mm-hmm.
He was the boss, and I was just trying to improve myself so that I could better handle my responsibilities at work. I don't think you see that as a as an executive in the automotive design field. They just have different values, and I'm sure there are people now who are being asked to take a degree in a business administration because it makes them a better person, a better employee.
Mm-hmm.
But getting a master's of fine arts, they didn't see what the relationship there would be at all. I did.
Yeah. Well, you've come back, and you've been given, I think, a promotion.
No.
No.
Oh, when I came back, I started over.
You were a senior designer in '61, yes.
I was an assistant chief in '61, September, in the Advanced Automotive Studio, and when I returned, I was back to a senior designer, and I was then working for people that had been working for me, and I didn't feel that was right, but they didn't consider a master's degree any reason to move me ahead. And I essentially had to begin again.
Really?
So I wasn't very happy about that.
So you lost ground internally, even though you had...
And it took 4 years to move back up again.
But you were in the Chevrolet department. Of course, that was the key studio. That was the bread and butter studio.
Oh, sure. They put anybody that would work 100 hours in there. And that complained too much. It about killed me, but that's... I was young then. But yes, it did take me a long time. And I resented it. But there wasn't much I could do because I still wanted to work there. I still enjoyed the
What work. Sort of duties did you have in '61 as the for the Chevrolet Interiors? Were you pretty much the chief interior person?
No, let's see. I wasn't '61. '65. I was just a senior designer.
I mean, '65.
Yeah, '65. I was just senior designer, which meant we did anything on the interior of the automobile. Instrument panel was still not something we were working on. We did small details on it.
Yeah.
I did doors and seats and steering wheels and knobs and you know, everything like that. But
not on the instrument panel?
Not a lot. But that's all right, because I got to a point where I said, okay, apparently that's not something I'm going to ever be doing, so I tried to do more with what I had. And
was that pointed out explicitly or implicitly that it was a male preserve? Or?
Not really. They gave us some opportunity, and I did. Now at this point, you see, I not having had the experience, I was not as qualified to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But then at that point, they said, "Well, we better give her some experience." Well, then they just tell you, "You know, now you're going to do instrument panels." It was not an easy task.
Yeah.
And. By the time I got my clay model finished and someone else was doing another, it was like competition again.
Mm.
Well, my instrument panel to me looked just as good as the one next to it, but they chose not to use it for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And I think you get discouraged very easily that way, especially with such a big program. But as you move up the line, and as here, assistant chief designer of Chevy 1 and 2, you really had to direct the design, which was all right then.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to go to the board and draw it. And I think I'd learned enough by that time that I could direct it rather than that. I don't know, I must have made a lot of enemies too, but certainly in those days they made it hard on those people who were much older and had to work for me, especially for a woman.
You were mentioning a particular supervisor whom you prefer to remain nameless, who had a distinct bias in the sense of work assignments for a female
Could you elaborate on that a bit?
Well, yes. I feel that in this particular case, it was thought that we or I didn't have enough to do, and that when an extra job would come along, such as a show car or a job for the government or whatever, mm-hmm. that I was called upon to do that in addition to my regular production studio duties.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not object. I had to do it.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't feel that that was particularly fair, because just because it fell into the realm of interior work, meaning just adding fabrics and mm-hmm. seat design and that kind of thing, it certainly should not have been beneath any of the men to do it.
Right. But apparently certain people perceived this to be so.
That's right. So that was really one of my biggest objections to so-called being used.
So in these 4 years, you had quite an uphill battle to regain your former position as assistant chief designer. How did you accomplish that?
Well, I would not have minded being a senior designer for forever,
mm-hmm.
but early on I realized that in order to make more money, I had to accept positions of the assistant chief designer mm-hmm. and eventually chief designer in order to keep up with my with the cost of living and my standard of living.
You didn't
and the
have
things
a
that I wanted to
situation
do.
In those days.
Yes and no, but it seemed that the women were not on an equal level as
not
men.
On the same list.
No, they seemed to have houses before I did, and it's not a complaint. I just didn't really know any better, and maybe they had their reasons too. I don't know, but obviously, if you see in this bio that between 69 and 71, as being assistant chief designer of Chevy 1 and 2. They also added in 1970 coordinating color and trim for commercial vehicles, which there was a whole studio devoted for that to begin with, but I had to take that on as an added responsibility.
Didn't raise your pay grade at all?
No, as far as I know, it didn't. Mm-hmm. And that I have listed somewhere, and so I know exactly what I was making when.
Mm-hmm.
I left, for example, on a vacation, and the next day I had a phone call saying that I was going to be responsible for what they called a branch out show, which would be new ideas in trim design, and be head of a studio. And I think that was in essence the beginning of seeing whether or not I could handle a management position mm-hmm. for a whole studio. It worked out really very well, but I don't believe anyone else, men particularly, ever had to go through a test. And again, this is not something that I really want to do. I wanted to be on the board. I wanted to design. I did not have to manage.
You didn't want to be an administrator?
No. No. But I accepted it. And as you can see, I was finally made chief designer of Chevrolet Interior 2, and that was designing the small cars, which I loved. And
tell us a little bit about that. What small cars were they?
Well, as I recall, it was the Nova, and the Camaro, and forgive me for not remembering, I don't think I had the Corvette. Probably the Chevette was in there at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever we would consider small car at the time, mm-hmm. again, this is long ago, I don't recall it all. And in those days, my memory was pretty good, because I could remember 2 and 3 years, but mm-hmm. not anymore.
Why small car? Did you ever wonder at that choice?
No, and it didn't matter, because I prefer to work on the small ones than the Monte Carlos and the Biscaynes and the Bel Airs, and they offered really no interest, because to me they seemed to look the same. Mm-hmm. The little cars were much more interesting. And sporty cars. I love to work on sporty cars.
Because you're a Corvette.
So I preferred that. But unfortunately, and I don't know if you want to get into this, in 73, I had a cancer operation, and from then on my time was limited to working with having to take a lot of time off,
mm-hmm.
and then chemotherapy, and I found I could not really give what I felt was the amount of time the job needed. To complete assignments, and I didn't like having to leave in the middle of the day in order to come home and rest. And so it was my decision in June of 77 to retire unfortunately.
Well, I don't want you to go quite that fast.
Well, that's all right.
If I move you back. That's all fascinating. We'll get to that in some detail. What was the hierarchy in those days? What were the titles and how were they parsed? And how did they fit a studio hierarchy? You had, of course, Bill Mitchell at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And did he have a chief assistant in those, in the...
Tom Christensen was really the personnel area, yes.
Was he the Howard O'Leary of that era, do you think?
Yeah, I don't remember Howard O'Leary, but I...
He was an Earl function.
Yes. It was more personnel work. Smooth the things over. Keep the troops happy.
But don't give them too much.
Yeah, Mitchell will have a fit if he listens to this. But I always felt that that office was out of bounds. It wasn't a place that was comfortable to visit.
Yeah.
Later on, when there would be, below that, I should say, would be the Charlie Jordans and the Irv Rubicki and certainly Dave Holes and Henry Hagas. They were all exterior-oriented chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard for an interior designer to gain a lot of respect because exteriors came first. There was no doubt about it. And we all knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And Don Schwarz tried very hard. Ted Moon, you've heard me speak of him.
Yeah.
And even in their dual roles and on down the line with George Angersbach and Bob Carr, we all tried very hard to make interiors as important as exteriors. But as long as the exterior people were at the top, it was going to be very difficult to promote interiors. We finally were able to move some of our people outside the garage, for example.
Right.
But most everyone else was inside. We couldn't figure that out. We finally got into the... I mean, it was something that simple.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the hierarchy, it was all exterior-oriented people, not interior until later on.
That has continued until just very recently.
Yes.
I think the emphasis on ergonomics has moved the interior people finally to the forefront.
That's right.
And finally people are beginning to realize that the drivers, that the user-friendliness principle is really paramount.
Well, and you're inside of your car.
So that's where you spend
sometimes
80, 90%
that's
of the time.
Right. But they still try to tell me that you purchase a car by the way the exterior appeals to you, and maybe the initial feeling is that, but believe me, if there was something wrong on the interior, you'd sure hear about it.
Yeah. Well, I suppose that you fought this battle all through your career, the fact that that interiors were secondary to exteriors.
Yes.
And I think people like Ted Moon and others who have, with your help over the years, have finally successfully broken down that stereotype.
I hope so.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that people like Kathy Wagner and Barbara Munger and Nellie Toledo, the three women that I know,
mm-hmm.
not only are still there,
yeah.
but I think they have commanded more respect because they are doing instrument panels. They are working on more of an engineering aspect and combining that with the interior decorating, you might say.
Right.
And that's not to say that we didn't need this groundbreaking. It had to happen, and it will happen in any industry. It's just this was such a unique one and so definitely male-oriented.
I guess at this point in your career, in the early 70s, how many female colleagues do you have at this point as full-time designers at General Motors?
Well, we like to say that there was one in every studio, and my guess is there might have been five or six at that time. Yes. We tried hard to say that there would be one in every studio. They were not, however, all designers. We did have a few that were clay modelers or sculptors.
Yeah.
And again, there was one woman long ago in the drafting room.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as design, we really just had one in each studio. And I don't recall any more than that.
Did you get a feeling of confraternity when you got together? Did you socialize together aside from the ones who initially lived with you?
Not really.
You didn't get together as a group?
No.
Have a lunch or a dinner?
No. we all went our separate ways. And some of them were married and some of us were not, and I think that had a lot to do with it. And besides, we had a lot of other interests.
Yeah.
And it varied from Peg Sauer, who was a wonderful sculptress. I was interested in metal and drawing and photography. And I think when you get in with people that you've been working with all day, you tend to dwell on the same subject over and over. And in spite of my loving cars, why I did not associate, and as you say, for luncheons and that kind of thing, with the other women. I think in my case, I would prefer to see the men, because we talk about different things.
Did you ever get to know the person who was publicized as the design engineer for the Corvette? Was it Zora Duncan?
Duntoff.
Yeah.
Zora Arkus Duntoff. Oh, yes.
That was Z-O-R-A.
Arkus, and I...
A-R-K-U-S.
D-U-N-T-O-V, I think. He, he's a very interesting man, and he came to GM one day, and I think he had heard that there were women at Chevrolet, and I happened to own a Corvette. And when he heard about that, he said, oh, we must fix this car for you. And I said, well, what's wrong with it? It's fine. He says, well, we'll put this kind of shock on and that kind of clutch and everything. And by the time I got through, I could hardly drive it. But he meant the idea of this is probably the forerunner of people driving special cars, so that we got the feel for what was happening. Most of us couldn't afford to go out and buy a new car every year. And this is one way of finding out what was happening. And at some point, we were driving Fords and we were driving Chrysler products, and we were able to drive them at home and back at least, and sometimes on a weekend, so that we would know the improvements, even though we didn't buy the car. And I think that was the beginning of it. And I think Zora just wanted us to be informed, see what it was like to ride with a stiff suspension. What was that? You know, we didn't know.
So you did get a thorough grounding in the mechanics of the car as well, at least at that point.
Well, I think you almost had to. I made it a point to know as much as I could without going for an engineering degree. But I think you pick that up. If you see for the first time in your life a whole car, full size, drawn blueprint style and plastered to a wall as long as this wall here, full size, and the engineers start asking you, where are we going to put the radio? You better know what you're looking at, because it might run into the air conditioning outlets, or it might be into structure. And that's why I felt it important to go back to high school nights to get a handle on machine design and mechanical design, so that I could draw it too.
Right.
And by learning to draw it, you learn to see things in a different way, especially when you have three or four views, one on top of the other, on a full size drawing. That way, you wouldn't be looking too foolish if some hotshot engineer came along and said, okay, Sue, we've got this over here now. What do you think if we moved it over there, and so on and so forth? I mean, you could easily get caught in a trap.
Right, yeah.
And well, they didn't try that once. They tried it many times.
Did they really?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And I must say that after they realized that I was, you know, there to do the work, I think they did take time and explain things to me. They, many of them did.
You felt it being forearmed as forewarned.
Yes.
You tossed it off as an extra assignment, but obviously they felt that you could handle the commercial vehicles, which were other bread and butter items too. At this point, 1970, there's a heightened interest in making the trucks over from rather drab vehicles into something more exciting, and I think perhaps that had a factor in selecting.
Maybe. I don't know the reason.
Did you find it interesting?
Yes. Oh, yes.
In what way?
But there were some resentments, too, because it just, again, was walking on the hot stones, you know. You just were again in a man's world. Now we're here. We are. We bad enough in cars. Now we're in
the
trucks.
Even more so. Yeah, they're invading.
Sure.
The place, right?
And these were not little ones either. These were these
big semi-tractors.
Big guys, and it was a different experience. The men that ran the studio were different. The general managers and the whole hierarchy was a different group of people. You have to win them over.
And how did you accomplish that?
Oh dear, well, you know how women are. I don't know. It's I think part of it is just being yourself. And
I think so.
And if you can show them that you're trying to help instead of taking over.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That helped.
What were your duties?
Well, as it says, just to make sure that we coordinated everything together. Mm-hmm. And
coordinated with what?
Well, you see, in some cases the colors and the trim were similar, not the same, but similar. And so therefore, knowing the reps that would come in with the fabrics and understanding the trim maybe more, mm-hmm. Because I'd done it for so long.
Yeah.
It was really just organization, that's all.
Were you asked to be innovative in the sense of coming out with new colors,
well,
new
yes,
fabrics?
Yeah, uh-huh. But
schemes?
I didn't find that it wasn't a burden, it was just different. Mm-hmm. And I learned quite a lot from it. And their colors, as I recall, their paints had to be different. Different people made them and produced mm-hmm. them, and
yeah.
on and on.
Yeah.
Their fabrics were slightly different too. But I felt a slight resentment from some of the designers, some of the men that were designers. Yeah, because I think they'd been doing it. Why not continue?
Mm-hmm. So why were you transferred?
I don't know. I wasn't a transfer.
I mean, this was an added extra. Added duty, yeah.
Maybe it was just so that I would get more experience.
Yeah.
In preparation for whatever.
Mm-hmm. But there was a pretty much a revolution in truck interiors at this time, was there not?
Not as much as now.
No.
No, vans and trucks now are
more, a little more in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Seven.
I still feel that it was just maybe just to see what I could, you know, how much I could handle.
You've noted here the Branch Out Show. Can you tell us a little bit about that in 1971? What was mm-hmm. how did that come about, and how were you assigned to it?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I was on vacation, and they called me to tell me that this is something they had wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they noticed that I was a little disgruntled at that point or what, but it could be.
Mm-hmm.
It could be.
Sure.
And so I had no plans about leaving. I just, sometimes you just say to yourself, maybe there is something else.
Mm-hmm.
And if they sensed that, that was the time, because they called and said, we want you to be responsible and head up a studio for Branch Out and for new ideas and trim design. And that meant really new things, new fabrics, new ideas, new designs with whatever we could come up with. And they had already selected their people that they wanted me to work with. And we were set up on a floor where it was completely away from the automotive section.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a marvelous time. And I got a lot out of that because, again, I had not had that much experience in managing people.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that went very well because it was all new. And we had a show in the auditorium, and I have slides of that and some photographs of the work. And everybody really did their own thing. And for the first time, no one was telling you what to do and how to do it. And
mm-hmm.
We had all the freedom in the world, and that was good. I think George Moon was pretty much responsible for getting the feel of that going, but Don Schwarz was also coordinating.
What was the Branch Out Show?
Was
it internal or external?
Well, interiors and...
I mean, was it an internal operation?
Yes. Oh,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah, this was just to give people a shot in the arm
for
production work eventually. So we just designed seats and doors,
mm-hmm.
and that was it, and just really put on a show. And had all kinds of props and called in our experts to make the best of all of this. And then we all had our little speeches to give. And, introduced many, many new concepts of trim design. And I can't go through all of it now because I don't remember all of it. But so many of the new fabrics, suede and new ways of, I have to say, decorating and designing the seats came out of this. Mm-hmm. And certainly Kathy Wagner was involved in that, and Joan Gatewood. And I think there was one man that we had working with us. So we had a balance, but mm-hmm. it was a little more women than men involved in it.
It was an interior attempt, an internal attempt for a breakout, in other words, a
yeah.
branch out of new ideas, innovations, and did you feel this was a chance to spread your wings a bit? To be completely innovative outside of the disciplines of the day-to-day design?
Oh, exactly.
Problems.
It was terrific. Mm. And I have to congratulate those executives who thought of it.
Who were they?
Well, Ted Moon
yeah.
and,
Don,
and Don Schwartz.
Sure,
I just,
okay,
they must have had to do a sell job to somebody because yeah. it cost them a small fortune.
This was the chief, they were the chief interior designers.
They were the dual role at the
yeah,
time.
Right.
So I felt really very, very good about it, and I think most of the studios did too, because we were able to use a lot of the results of that. Don't ask me what they are because I don't recall them all, but there was enough there for everybody, top of the line down
yeah.
to, you know, really stark things.
What came out of that you can recall? What innovations maybe were hatched there for the first time?
Oh, I knew you.
Well, just the type of generic type of thing.
Well, I think the use of more natural fabrics rather than the old Lurex glittery look,
yeah.
things that became more
of those
suede.
Threads.
Yeah, all of that was gone by then. And I understand, though, some of it is back. Softer looks, more. We had really casual looking things and some very elegant things. And some furs, as I recall, were used. Innovations in carpeting and the way of establishing how to mold the carpet and that
different
kind of
piles.
Thing. Yeah, just. But more than that, just the designs themselves were different. And meaning that they weren't, you couldn't actually build them at the time. In some cases, we had to hand build a lot of this stuff. And I don't recall if that was before or after molded doors, but certainly we tried very hard to use parts of the molded doors that we had. Wrapping materials up over the top of the door was something that was, I don't recall the exact year, but those were things we could never do because of wear. Now we had materials that would accept the wear, and on and on. I'm sure we can find the pictures of that and would jog people's memories, but perhaps some of the other girls would remember it.
You, an area which you've not touched on, obviously in your capacities, your various capacities in interior work, you were able to work with the various mills and the various people who were in charge of designing new fabrics and new dyes and new materials. Did you meet regularly with the suppliers?
Oh yes.
Were you able to come up with some
yes.
new thinking on their part?
Mm-hmm. In fact, not only for that show, but because we didn't use fabrics that our reps had produced. We used fabrics from the furniture industry.
Mm-hmm.
They were not production things.
Mm-hmm.
So out of that, you see, we would take something that somebody really liked and say, okay, CNA, or it would be Collins and Aikman, or any of the other representatives, Millikan, so on. Can you reproduce this?
That's what Collins and Aikman.
C-O-L-L-I-N-S and Aikman, A-I-K-M-A-N. And that was just one of the many
yeah.
representatives. But just to give you an idea, why we would show them the fabric that was designated for furniture or fashion and say, can you reproduce this in any form? And we'd have to work and work and work on it.
That's incredible. You mean to say that they were outside the furniture fabric industry in terms of what they presented to you? Possibly?
Oh, no, they were in that industry too. So we asked them to bring things that were not automotive
in other
fabrics.
Words, to enlarge
the thinking sure.
For automotive fabrics.
Why bring us something that we know we could use? You see,
right,
we
yeah.
wanted to give Fisher Body a
shot in the arm.
Yeah, sure.
They were rather conservative.
Oh, yeah, and they had to be. You know, somebody, well, you had to test these seats to make sure that there was a wearability and all that, but I said,
yeah.
oh, forget that, you know, let's get something new. But out of this...
Something more exciting. Yeah.
Well, sure, and out of this came many show cars and many different proposals, and we had people going to New York to, you will see further on there, in, when in 1974, for example, still trying to get new methods for printing on fabrics, and certainly Ted Moon can elaborate on that more than I can, but we had people who were going beyond the initial source just to find new ways of doing things. And I find that perhaps to be one of the biggest contributions you can make, is go away from what you know how to do.
Right.
And that's what we continue to press for.
So this really epical show in 1971, which I believe, if I recall, was an internal show for the whole staff.
And all of Fisher Body and the automotive fabric representatives, because we wanted to show them what we had in mind too. It was exciting.
Am I to understand that there was also a coup in the fact that you invited all the wives?
Yes, I believe they
were
there.
For the first time.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. You know more about it than I remember.
Well, no,
I can't remember it all.
I know a little bit about it because I've talked to George, but I was fascinated by the fact that if he and Mr. Schwartz enlisted all the interior designers' efforts to come up with some new thinking and mm-hmm. some breakthrough, as you say, branch out or breakthroughs, and to go beyond the cliches that had become frozen in mm-hmm. interior design, this is really an earth-shaking event.
Well, we did have the executive wives too. We had
That's what I meant.
We had a special presentation for them
at the Styling Rotunda.
Yeah, and Mrs. Mitchell was there, and Jim McDonald's wife, I don't remember her name, and several other of the general manager's wives, and Mrs. Cole at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And
is that Dolly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there were different reactions. We...
Did you take formal, did you give them a questionnaire or anything to fill out?
I don't remember. We used to do that, but yeah. I don't know if at that point we did.
You must have wanted to sample the reactions somehow.
Well, you never knew whether they were being kind or whether they and were just giving us, you know, a line or not. It was hard because the one that really said what she felt was Mrs. Cole.
Yes, she was outspoken. Yes.
And I prefer to not make any more comments about that.
But they were, I think whatever she said, you were glad that she spoke out.
Well, yes, because in some cases we were told, too, what we should be doing.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you do that, I'm not sure whether it was this time, because she had been out before and we'd done some things for her, and she thought they were awful.
Oh, really?
And I happened to agree with her, but we had to do it. That might have been one of the early show cars, too. I don't recall, but, you know, literally it was sort of a bedroom look.
Uh-huh.
And she would rather look at the trucks, you know. So.
Yeah.
So you never know. You see, you can't, we try to tell them that. You can't outguess your population, and certainly not the wives of the executives. They have their own thoughts, but they not all were quite as descriptive.
Well, if the wife of the president, General Motors, if that's what Ed Cole was in those days, said to you, look, I think this stuff stinks, I really think, I would hope, I want to ask Ed to suggest to Mr. Mitchell that we really should go in another direction.
Yeah, what we'd be in trouble.
Did that ever happen?
Not really. She expressed it to the men that, you know, we were always in the background, and she would not discuss that with us. She didn't talk to us. She talked
she
to the executives.
Oh.
It just happened that I happened to be at the luncheon one time with her, and I didn't exchange one word with her. Mrs. McDonald, on the other hand, was a lovely, kind, helpful person, and was also sympathetic to our problem. She could tell that we were, you know, put into this position and not liking it very well.
Yeah.
But we did it. And hopefully something good would come of it.
Fascinating. Well, this is really, sorry.
I have to.